This week on the Backup Wrap-Up, we dive into the disastrous data loss event that hit Deduce, a cloud-based research data management platform back in 2014. Deduce lost access to their primary data and their backups simultaneously, resulting in the loss of over 3 weeks' worth of customer research. We discussed what caused the crash, as well as some questionable backup practices. These practices resulted in a ton of data loss for doctoral researchers who lost countless hours of painstaking work they will never get back. We discuss what Deduce did right and what they could have done better so that we can all learn. If you're new to the pod, I'm W. Curtis Preston, aka Mr. Backup, and there's a reason I'm so passionate about this topic. When I first started in backups over 30 years ago, my company lost an important database that I couldn't restore. Since then, I've dedicated my career to making sure that would never again happen to me or anyone who will listen to me. We turn unappreciated backup admins into cyber recovery heroes. This is the Backup Wrap-Up. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, W. Curtis Preston, a.k.a. Mr. Backup, and I have with me my tax non-advisor, Prasanna Maliandi. How's it going? I've needed you a lot over the last few days.
It's that time of the year, Curtis. You know, I wouldn't expect anything else. For our international listeners who don't know, April 15th is the U.S.'s day that you have to file your yearly tax, income tax, with the government, with the IRS.
You can file an extension, but any money that you owe has to be paid by that time. Yeah. And this was, I'm going to say, one of the, if not the most complicated years that I've ever done tax, because halfway through the year, I was laid off. And so then I went, you know, self-employment, and I went like 9 different ways of self-employment. And, you know, and I had some carryovers from previous years, and I had some of this, some of that. And I'm like, I think I'm going to be okay. I might not be okay.
Yeah.
Turned out I was way okay. Yeah. I was very okay. But you may recall that there was a day there or so where I was not having.
I recall that. And for people who may not understand the complexities of the U.S. tax system, they're probably thinking, oh, don't you just like take your income and they just take a check for based on a certain percentage? Yeah, that's not how the U.S. system works.
Yeah. And then when you add in the complexities of some of the different types of self-employment that I did, there's some very specific deductions that you have to take, and then you have to really record stuff to make those deductions. And it was just...
I remember the picture you sent of just like, hey, here are the things I have to be tracking in order to be able to do this deduction. I was like, oh my gosh, Curtis, there must be a better way to do
that. Yeah, I will say I did figure out a better way for that. Well, I've only done that particular one for like 7 years, and I never had figured out a better way. And actually this year, for the first time, I figured out a better way.
So 2024 will be better for you.
2024 will be so much better. And also, you helped me, come up with a spreadsheet. I mean, I did it on my own, but, you know, there was definitely some advice in there. And man, you're right. The U.S. tax code is super complicated, we have a progressive tax system. So like they tax this percentage on that amount and this percentage on that amount. So it's not just figure out how much you made and take X percentage of it. It is so not that.
Yep.
And of course, I live in California and we have a state income tax. So we have that in addition. And just in my tax bracket, from the lowest, you know, there are, what did we find? Six yep. different layers of that. It starts at 1%, then 2%, 3%, 4%, you know, all the way up to like 9%, I think.
California, it's 12.3. Yeah. Is a mess.
I know it goes past that, but you know, if you make over a certain amount, you end up paying 9% on that final on the marginal. That's what's called the marginal tax rate.
So it's like every dollar you make additional gets taxed at that rate, and
right.
And then the other challenge is you have kids; they have different deductions. credits and deductions change every year, depending on what gets passed, what doesn't get passed. Your brackets don't stay fixed because some are adjusted based on the rate of inflation, but some are based on one inflation rate, others is based on a different inflation rate. So it's a giant mess. You basically need a PhD in order to be able to do this stuff and keep up with this.
Yeah. Yeah, but through it all, I have contacted my financial non-advisor persona, Malianti.
I'm like, let's just say you are not the only person who talks to me about taxes.
Is that right? That does not surprise me because you're a smart little person.
It's just random bits of knowledge that I have in my head.
Yeah, I love how you can just quote the marginal tax rates for different levels of income. And you're like, oh, you know, with the self-employment tax, you know, you can deduct half of it, right? And I'm like, no, I didn't know that. Yeah. And of course, I bet a significant portion of our listeners go, yeah, no, that's why I have a guy, right? I just give the money to the guy and the guy just tells me,
But it's useful to learn, right? Because then you can figure out the impact of certain things that you're going to be doing or like how you should be withholding. And honestly, like, it's great to have a guy, but the guy charges money and it's expensive.
The guy does charge money. Yeah. I think one meeting with the guy, and by the way, it could also be a girl, right? You know, one meeting with the guy and you've spent like the entire thing of just what I spend with TurboTax for the year. And that's just one meeting, right? So my guy's free. Except he's not allowed to be my guy. He's my non-advisor. Legally is not giving me financial advice. Our financial advice is get a guy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, at least it's done.
At least, yeah, it is done. Both last year and this year, I have filed my estimated taxes for Q1 like a week early. I mean,
look at that, Curtis. And I'm hoping that a lot of people who have complicated taxes don't wait till the end.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And I'm just so super happy to be done with my taxes, both for the last year and for this quarter. I'm so super, super excited. But we're going to talk about something not so exciting. We have yet another episode of, you know, cloud disasters. And this one.
I don't know about you.
What? Go ahead.
I don't know about you, but I've kind of enjoyed this series. I know it's sort of taking joy in other people's misery, but I've found it to be kind of like interesting, right? To kind of look and figure out, hey, what did people do? What happened? Because these are things that could happen if you do something wrong or misconfigure something, or maybe it's not even your fault and you just ended up getting attacked by a malicious user and bad things happened.
I will say that this story, there's one particular part in the middle of it that is the crux of what happened that is so bad backup design that we're gonna get to, right? At the core, they had some other mistakes that, you know, the same mistakes that everybody else makes. And sadly, it appears that this was one where they stepped on their own toe or whatever, right? But this was not an attack. This was just, you know, some of the headlines, you know, use phrases like fat fingering and stuff like that. We are, of course, talking about a company who I'd never even heard of prior to this story, and it's called Deduce. At least I think that's how it's pronounced, because they are a, you know, what do they describe? They're a cloud-based qualitative and mixed methods research, data management, and analysis application. That's a mouthful. And they were in Manhattan Beach, California, which, for the record, is right up the road from me and right down the road from our friend Jeff Rockland. That's literally like right next door to him. And they were designed to help researchers organize, analyze, and collaborate on qualitative and mixed methods research data. And one particular group of people that used this platform a lot were people doing their doctoral dissertation. And so this is going to have
a bunch of research,
and that you're just getting ready to file to you know, to what do you call it? You what do you do with your dissertation? You file it. You defend. Yeah. present and defend, right? And you're just at that moment where you're about to do that. And this bad thing happened. So they had some competitors. I'll just finish this part. They had some competitors, Atlas.ti, Nivivo, and Max. They all have these interesting names, but they were apparently the only SaaS-based, web-based portal, which made them the only game in town for doing it the way that they were doing it.
Yeah. And my guess is people, like if you're an academic, you're probably like, hey, I'll just throw it into spreadsheets or throw it into Microsoft Access and just run it locally. But that doesn't really scale. And then you have to manage it. And then you have to worry about how do I protect it and back it up? And what happens if my laptop crashes? How do I sync it over to OneDrive or wherever else it has to go? And yeah, so I could see the appeal of this company.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned it was a cloud provider. They are hosted on top of Azure.
Yes, they are hosted on Azure. And this was one of the reasons that we wanted to cover this, because we were trying to get a story from each of the major cloud providers. And this was the biggest story that we could find on Azure. But I don't know if the fact that they were on Azure was really part of the story. It almost was, as we're going to cover it in the story. But in the end, I think this was all them.
Actually, I take it back. It's Azure, not Azure.
Oh, it depends on who you ask. We could go on Microsoft Copilot and ask them how to pronounce it. Do you want to describe what actually happened?
Yeah. So everything was going fine, right? They had the service up and running. And then sometime in 2014, they encountered an event, right? And it was basically a failure of a service running on top of Azure, which initially they said was a Microsoft service that had an issue, but turns out it was just their service that they had been operating that just leverages Microsoft component infrastructure to run on.
Right.
And so what ended up happening is that failed and they basically lost access to their databases, which hosted the data for the end users. They also happened to lose access to their data itself and the backups at the same time. Yeah. And so a lot of bad things happened all at once.
Yeah. I mean, this is why we back up, right? Right? Because bad things happen. What I don't fundamentally understand is they describe it as, we were in the middle of our database encryption and backup process. What does that mean to you?
I read that as they're encrypting the database before they write out a backup.
Right. But encrypting place?
No, I think...
as an event?
My guess is... Well, it's almost like streaming, right? So I think as they're reading data out, they're encrypting it and writing it out.
Okay. Okay.
Right?
It's just that the event damaged the database. That's what I don't understand is why would a backup event damage the database?
Well, it's like the old days of Oracle, right? Yeah, I know you've been in this situation so many times, right, Curtis? Where it's like, hey, you did a backup, you took down my production database, right? There might have been an issue. And I know that in all your scenarios, Curtis, that's always been not the case, right?
Right.
That backup doesn't take down production, right? Maybe they just didn't code for it properly, or maybe there was just some race condition.
Yeah.
But for some reason, while they were doing a backup, their production database also had a failure.
Right. And I think this was good that they were encrypting the backup. But based on what I'm hearing, what I'm inferring from this is that this was a homegrown backup system, right?
Yeah.
Because they seem to, you know, make a big deal about the fact that they're encrypting it and then backing it up. It's like, okay, well, that's sort of standard, you know, SOP for most people, right? Yeah. So they had a failure of the primary database as they were backing it up. They were backing up, and this was the crucial part that I was talking about earlier, is that it's apparently they didn't have enough space or whatever, that they're overwriting the last good backup of the database as they're backing it up, and/or they're only backing up like once a month. because
or they're doing a bunch of incrementals along the way.
If they were doing incrementals, they would have been able to restore to a better point in time.
That's true. So maybe we should talk about that point in time that they actually were able to restore for.
Yeah. So after, I guess we kind of jumped ahead. So we're doing the research afterward. Yeah. So, so let's back up to, you talked about the event. So after that event, they went out and they did what we tell people to do. They put out a blog post and they're like, here's the situation. We believe we can go back to, this was May of 2014. We know for a fact that the March backup is good. We think we can also restore the April backup. We unfortunately believe that we are going to be unable to restore the May backup. And so all of the changes and anything that you put in the system for the last 2 to 3 weeks will be gone. So I am inferring from that they only backed up once a month, because otherwise they would have been able to get a lot closer.
And it wasn't just the database. Like, I was reading Reddit posts where they're like, hey, we talked to a service person or a support person. They basically said, if you created a new account even in that May timeframe, you're basically out of luck. Right. So it wasn't
the entire application, right?
Yeah.
So it's possible that they weren't overriding the last good backup. It's just that the last good backup was from over a month ago.
Yeah. Or it could be that their more recent backups were corrupt.
We don't have any information to suggest that.
We don't have any information. Yeah. But
I also don't understand why, if all backups were equal, why didn't they immediately try restoring the one from April? They said, we know for a fact we can get the one from March. We think we're going to get the one. And they go, and they made a comment about, we realize that it reminds me a little bit of the Rackspace event, where what we can do the quickest is we can get the March one up and running. Why wasn't the April one also just as good as the March one, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what happened there, but there was something that was not as good about the April backup. But it did appear that they eventually were able to get that up, but they lost 2 to 3 weeks worth of effort.
Yeah. Yeah. And even for the April backup, they didn't actually restore it. So using the Wayback Machine, right, we were able to go back and find the original blog post for this.
Right. Why did we have to do that, Prasanna? Why did we have to use the Internet Archive?
Because the company took down that post and created a new post for that same date that shed different light on what had happened and their steps.
Interesting, right?
Yeah. So from that May blog post, they basically said, or soon thereafter, right? I think it was a couple of weeks later, they were like, hey, we're able to get you back up and running for your March. And for April, we were able to restore the data, but they didn't want to merge the data back into the original database. Right. So they actually created a staging site where people had to go to manually in order to be able to pull down their data want to access.
This is so much like the Rackspace event, right? Yeah. And so what that tells me, and again, we're not taking joy in this, but what that tells me is that they didn't have a regular tested procedure, because they didn't they didn't know that the April one was good. If they knew the April one was good, they would have just restored the April one, because by restoring the March one, they made, you couldn't just do an incremental restore on top of the March database. So they created this extra work for themselves and their customers.
And especially their entire thing was, we want to get people up and running as quickly as possible, right? That's why they did the March one. But like you said, Curtis, if April was good, they should have just used April and it would have been the same amount of time.
There had to be something up with the April one. You'd sort of have to read between the lines. There was something up with the April one. And then we've talked about this before. We urge people not to do homegrown backup. And when I said this last time, you said sometimes you have no choice.
Yeah.
I would like to
say it again.
Well, I'll say it again, but I would like to point out the fact that they were running on Azure, and Azure has backup features built into it, right?
Yep.
They could have taken a snapshot of their entire environment every day, every hour. They could have done that, and they would have had essentially, a copy of their database from 2 hours ago. They could have, and that wouldn't have been homegrown. I'm just saying they could have done that.
Well, the other thing they could have done is, why don't they have a disaster recovery copy? Like, if this is a SaaS service,
right?
Wouldn't you have expected a DR copy to be available somewhere? Where even if the production instance went down for some reason, they should have been able to come back up, even if it wasn't a backup.
Yeah. So this is where, you know, we often talk about that if your data is sitting on a SaaS service, I think it's your responsibility to back it up, or at least to make sure that it's backed up. You can make an argument as to whether or not you should use their backup service if they have one. I think we've got three stories now that show that sometimes their backup service is as good as their IT. I think you should be backing up your own data. But generally speaking, some of these SaaS services, they will have a DR copy that isn't any good for you if you do something stupid. But if they do something stupid, or there's a fire, or there's an attack, they've got a copy that they can restore the entire environment. That appears to be what they had here, but it was just woefully out of date. And so the vast majority of their customers did get their data back, but there were a few, and I want to just point out a few that they were quoted in the story. There was Margaret Fry, a postdoctoral researcher at Harvard University, lost about 60 annotated texts and over 100 hours worth of coding work related to her research on AIDS and sexual attraction in Southern Africa. Jason Richardson, an associate professor at the University of Kentucky, and his colleagues lost around 100 hours of work on a project analyzing job advertisements for school principals to assess how well Kentucky prepares aspiring school administrators. There's one comment on DDoS's Facebook page that the company had managed to destroy their wife's $10,000 research project. So there were real people on the other, and these weren't just companies. These were just regular people trying to get their doctorates done. They lost, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead. But to their credit, though, DDoS actually had, now I don't know if it was before this issue or after the event, but they did say they have functionality. Actually, no, it was even before, because for staging, this is how you get your data out. There is an export functionality.
Right.
In DDoS that a user could use to pull all their data out of DDoS for doing like what you talked about, a local backup.
Right.
So it is possible that these users could have been using that to protect themselves from these situations. And DDoS is still around. And so I highly recommend people who are using DDoS, maybe you should periodically export your own data out.
Can I edit you and take the word maybe out there?
Yes.
Yeah. So you should periodically back up your work, no matter where it's residing. You know, a periodic, you know, inefficient backup that has a poor recovery point actual is still better than nothing, right?
Yeah.
I remember I have a niece that came to me with her. She had a laptop and she had her master's on this laptop. And the laptop, the drive was making those noises, you know,
the click, 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 click.
Yeah, yep. The hard drive should not make. We were able to get off her master's thesis off of that drive before it just went up in smoke. And it was killing me because I was like, you don't have a backup of this really important work? You know, I feel for these people. At the same time, you know, my statement is going to remain the same, that if your data is sitting in a SaaS service somewhere, it's your responsibility to make sure that it's being properly backed up.
Yeah.
And I still say, even if the SaaS vendor offers backup, which this one apparently did, I still think that you should do it some other way.
Yeah.
Well,
do we know if they offered backup, or was this just sort of their own internal?
Right. This was their internal DR, right?
Yeah.
What I don't know is whether or not they advertise this as part of the, you know. Yeah. Now, the CEO of DDoS said, "This is a horrible moment for our company. We have never lost data or had a breach. It's impossible to say how many customers have lost data because the firm doesn't monitor how customers are using their accounts. Only users can assess losses in their projects, not DDoS." Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a tough day for a lot of people.
Oh yeah. Like, and especially researchers, like coming back and getting that data is so difficult. And then just being like, yeah, it's gone. Just like that. Puff of smoke.
And And some of that data is irreplaceable.
Yeah.
Right? It's interviews of subjects. You know, I don't even want to try to, when you're in the middle of something that complicated, there is some data that is simply irreplaceable. So it, you know, it's a real shame what happened.
Did you want to talk about what they said they're going to do and what they've actually done?
Oh, yeah, that's a great segue. So they said they're now going to be doing 7 things. And when I say now, we mean 10 years ago, right? after the event, they said they were going to, it sounds like they went from not much to way overboard, right? Of course, I would never say that any backup system is overboard, but here's what they said they were going to do. They were going to develop a database mirror slave in Azure, a database mirror slave in Amazon S3, keeping a mirror copy of the entire blob storage, you know, including all the stuff in an encrypted volume, storing nightly database backups on the VHD virtual hard drive, I guess, in Azure blob storage and Amazon 3. So they're going to keep 3 nightly backups in 3 separate places, mirroring all Azure file data into an S3 bucket, carrying out weekly restore exercise for the database backups and a monthly bare bones restore. That all sounds great. Now, I do want to comment that anything that refers to mirroring to me isn't a backup, right?
Yeah.
That is a DR copy that will only be useful if what happens is like a fire, right? If there's any sort of attack, any of those mirrors are totally worthless because, or if you do something stupid like drop a table, all those mirrors are going to immediately get corrupted as well. But
it would have helped in their current, in the event that it happened.
I'm going to say it's unclear as to whether or not it would help in it.
Okay.
Because sorry, it could help. Sure.
Yeah.
It could have helped. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
The mirroring is not bad just because they're putting it here and they're listing all these things. It's a shame that they had to wait after the thing. What I also would have liked to seen in that list is I would have liked to have seen that one or more of these copies was immutable, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe they are. I don't know. You know,
it's a great list, but it's also one of those things like once a horse has left the barn, like what do you do? You know, it's sort of like, hey, we're just going to throw everything at this. And just say this is everything we're going to do.
Yeah.
What is actually makes sense from a business perspective. Because sure, you could do all these things, but just imagine the cost you would be spending for backup. Right? Your backup copies are probably more than your production copies at that point.
Mm. Yeah. It depends on on the way they're doing them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, to take your analogy, you know, the horse is laying out dead in the fields and you're like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to lock the barn door now. And then we're going to put another padlock on top of that lock. And then we're going to put a fence around the area in front of the barn just in case the lock fails. And then, we're going to have a guy standing there with a trank gun to shoot the horse if the horse comes out of the barn. It's like, yeah, that's all great, but your horse is dead. So you need another horse.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, that was a little morbid, but I apologize to the horse lovers in the group.
But the other thing we found, though, so that's what they had promised 10 years ago. But they do have in their, what is this called, in their security article on Deduce, sort of what they've actually done, right? So what they have done is they are using redundant storage volumes on Azure, all project data backed up in full on a nightly basis. A volume is on-site with 2 being off-site and replicated across geographic regions. And then the storage volume is encrypted and mirrored in real time to Amazon S3 storage. They've automated everything such that on a weekly basis, it'll download the most recent backup from each storage volume, verify they're using the correct version of the backup file, do a full test restoration of the database, and email reporting to all backup and restore process results to key members of the Deduce team.
Yeah, it's still, to me, it still reads like a homegrown system, but, you know, like one of the things, like, you know, I did a lot of homegrown systems over the years, right? Like one of the things, like with email reporting, is does your system report if it doesn't run, right? Is there a thing that's, you know, like what happened, you know, because sometimes you don't notice that you're not getting an email.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, has anybody noticed that we don't get the stop getting the backups, you know, like 3 weeks ago? Usually when you discover that is right after the bad thing happens, but, whatever it is. Right?
But even though it might be sort of homegrown from a automation process perspective, mm-hmm. like we don't have enough information, yeah. I think the fact that they're at least doing nightly backups, right, verifying it on a weekly basis, like these are, and also making sure that the data is stored offsite, right? I think maybe it's going a bit for, like, they may not have to do like multi-cloud. Maybe that's going a stretch too far, but I can see that they really are worried about data integrity.
So. There's no such thing as a stretch too far for backup and recovery, my friend.
Well,
they're doing the thing that I wished everybody did, but nobody does because it's too expensive.
Yes.
Right. So I can't fault them for doing that.
Yeah.
But
so it looks like they are doing the right things.
Mm-hmm.
From what we can gather. So it looks like they have learned and they're still around, right? People still continue to use them. They do have an active subreddit. They are continuing to release new features.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what was in their favor is that they were the only SaaS game in town. And for a lot of people that's probably a significant reason to use their service. Right.
Yeah.
I would also hope that this is a significant reason for anyone to do a regular export of their data, right? Yeah. When I'm using a service like that, where I tend to do is I do an export. Like if I'm doing a manual export, I'm doing it after significant events, like finishing my taxes, right?
Yep.
I did an export. I did a PDF. I didn't do exports of my Intuit data as I was doing it, right? But once I finished my return, I printed a PDF of that. I have a paper copy. I have a PDF copy that's on my laptop. It's backed up using my backup software. And I put it in Google Docs, right? So it's all over the place, right? But I don't do that every day. It's just you do it when you get to that moment where you're like, this is really good. I hope I don't lose this.
It's a good stopping point.
Yeah. It's like also I use voice recognition software, right? And sometimes it crashes and you lose whatever you said in that thing. And so I just got into the habit of anytime I finish like a page, I just hit, you know, I just say, because I can actually say, I almost said, hey, Siri, you know, click file save. That's what I say. Click file save. And I can do that, or you can just type control S, right?
Yeah.
Just do, you know, this is another lesson to learn is that should be a part of your mental process when you do stuff and it's storing that data in some place at the end, at that stopping moment, do you think to yourself, hey, is this data backed up in a way that protects me from all stupid things?
You know,
what are you laughing about?
When you're talking about the control save, right? Or control S to save it. So mm-hmm. I'm so used to working on Excel spreadsheets that I would always do like control S to save periodically.
Right, right.
Even when I use Google Sheets, I still do it anyway.
Right.
Just out of the force of habit.
Yeah, that's funny.
So lessons learned.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously we talk about, you know, it's still your responsibility to backup SaaS. The other thing is a month RPO, a month backup frequency. That's unacceptable. It's just, I can't imagine that being acceptable in anywhere. By the way, that is determined by your business, right? I have met at least one company where a month long RPO was fine. They were a paper mill, right? They were like, we don't, the computers, they don't have anything that we care about, right? They were fine with a month. That should be determined by your business, but a month seems really long to me. And the other thing is, if your backup system is, this is, we don't know if this is actually the case, but I'm inferring from it. If your backup system overwrites the last good backup as part of the process because you're so starved for storage, that is bad. Yes. That is bad, 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 bad. That is basic
storage is cheap.
Design bad. Well, it's cheap, but I'm just saying it's cheap, right? So much we do or don't do is because it's inexpensive, right?
Well, given that they are keeping all these copies and dealing with cross-site replication and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're not doing that now, right? I'm just saying there are people that their backup system is overriding the last good backup. Yeah. And that is a really, basically it means that if you're in the middle of the backup and something happens, you have no backup.
Yep.
Right. Unless you're backing up the backup. If you're backing up the backup, right.
Then
right. But if this is your only backup and you're overriding it with the next good backup because you're too cheap to buy enough storage for multiple backups, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Please do not. Please step away from the keyboard and have someone else design your backup system.
Please step.
That's true, though.
That's perfect. It is true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you think of any other lessons from this one?
I know that we talked about how Deduce may not have had the best backup systems in place.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also one of those things, like, it was unfortunate that they had these multiple issues that led to such a big failure.
Right.
But it is good that they did see, okay, here are gaps in our system. Here's how we're going to fix it. They were transparent with the users, and it looks like they've gotten their act together, which is good.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's just a matter of making sure they're continuing to stay up to date and reevaluating their architecture and infrastructure of their backup, especially, like, I don't know how they deal with ransomware.
Right.
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 Like, are they really using separate accounts, like when they're replicating to different buckets, different regions, or is it all like the same username, password, or whatever across the two? Right.
You kill me.
And right. Because hopefully they're keeping their Azure or their AWS system isolated.
Right. Right.
Right. Because it's not needed for anything other than
backups. Somewhere along the way, they're using immutable storage. Right.
Yep.
Yeah, and we do like the way that they had the blog. They were immediately transparent with what was going on. They were a little bit of mea culpa, right? They're like, hey, this is our fault. You know, it's all us. You know, we're so sorry. I'm a little disappointed that they deleted the blog after the fact.
We'll put a link to the blog in the show notes.
What's that? Yeah, we will put a link to the archive version of the blog because the internet never forgets. So all right, well, thanks for helping me work our way through another cloud disaster, Persona.
No, thank you, Curtis. This was fun.
Yeah, fun in a sad way that unfortunately involved a deceased horse.
But poor horsey.
Yeah. Well, subscribe, folks, so that you don't miss all of this amazingness. That is a wrap.
The Backup Wrap-Up is written, recorded, and produced by me, W. Curtis Preston. If you need backup or DR consulting, content generation, or expert witness work, check out backupcentral.com. You can also find links from my O'Reilly books on the same website. Remember, this is an independent podcast, and any opinions that you hear are those of the speaker and not necessarily an employer. Thanks for listening.